had my first near-death experience. And I went over a cliff. It was really icy roads, and we had a 90-foot drop, and we should have been dead on impact. We landed on a frozen lake, and we had literally missed a rock boulder by 2 millimeters. And if we would have hit it, we would have been crushed, and our vehicle should have rolled and should have killed us. So that was a deep, pivotal moment of awakening, of realizing in that moment, having that whole life review happen as we're going over the cliff. It really allowed me to realize, like, what are you doing with your life? It was those deep, riveting questions. Is this the path that you chose? Is this the path that you said that you were going to walk? Are you honoring yourself? Are you honoring the relationships around you? Are you happy?
Welcome to the Seven Hats Podcast. My name is Yuval Selig, and I've been on the entrepreneurial roller coaster for over 20 years. I've experienced it all throughout my journey: the grind, burnout, failure, and ultimately, success. The turning point for me was realizing that building a successful company is meaningless if you neglect the other significant areas of your life. So today, I'm inviting you to join me on an adventure through those seven areas, what I call the seven hats. Every week, my guests and I will drop valuable insights and pearls of wisdom, helping, motivating, and inspiring you to get your seven hats in order and deliver real impact with meaning. So let's get going.
Hey there, Seven Hatters. Today, we're embarking on an extraordinary journey of spiritual awakening, profound healing, and conscious leadership with Roxanne Shepue, a powerful healer, transformational guide, and modern-day shaman who turned near-death experiences into an enlightened path of serving humanity. In this soul-nourishing episode, we're illuminating hats 1, 3, 4, and especially at 7, the soul, the servant, the entrepreneur, and the seeker, as Roxanne shares her incredible journey from a deeply intuitive childhood through her life-altering spiritual awakening, revealing powerful lessons on trusting intuition, breaking generational cycles, and embracing life's calling. If you're ready to explore the realms of consciousness, healing, and what it truly means to lead from within, let's warmly welcome Roxanne to the Seven Hats. Roxanne, welcome to the Seven Hats.
Yuval, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here with you. I'm excited for this conversation today.
You're excited. I'm excited to have you here today. Your journey is nothing short of extraordinary, a path I think that's marked by deep transformation, near-death experiences. We all love those, and a calling to guide others into healing, leadership, and conscious creation. You didn't just find your purpose, you embodied it. And in doing so, you've become, I think, a beacon for so many seeking alignment, fulfillment, and a deeper connection to themselves. So today, we're diving into what it truly means to lead from within. I think it's so important, and how to trust the whispers of intuition, and why success isn't about force. It's about flow. And we'll also explore the hidden contracts that we make with ourselves, the power of clearing generational cycles, how we can step into consciousness leadership without falling into the traps of fear and control and burnout, all of the good stuff that you're so well versed in. However, before we get into all of those and all of those nuggets, the Seven Hatters love a good backstory.
Yeah.
So let's rewind a bit. Let's take us back to the beginning. Who Roxanne was before all of this? What were the pivotal moments that brought you where you are today? So the first question is always, where were you born and how was your childhood like?
Absolutely. Thank you, Val. And, you know, for me, my childhood was so reminiscent and so beautiful. I was born in Colorado Springs, Colorado. My father was in the Canadian Air Force military, and they were Canadian. Him and my mother were Canadian, and they were stationed out in the U.S. by the NORAD base, and along came me. And it was a beautiful journey. I loved, you know, the Rockies. I loved the terrain. I loved the people of Colorado Springs. And once my parents decided to separate, it was time for us to return back to Canada and be with my mother's family so that she could have the support of a single mother that was needed to help raise her two children. And I was surrounded by an incredible family here, incredible empowered women. You know, I had all of my mom's sisters who intentionally raised me and raised me to be magical and raised me to be empowered and to be a strong woman. And they all gifted me something incredibly powerful and beautiful, you know, sense of humor and, you know, taking the light out of life and what it is to be a woman leader, what it is to have kindness and compassion and empathy, what it is to care for one another and to be able to support one another and to be able to give off, you know, the shirt off your back in order to help provide and to help support somebody else that is in need. And these were the fundamental things that I was raised with. And I had this deep knowingness at a very tender age when I was a little girl. I was very connected to the angelic lineages. I would hear whispers. I would hear conversations. I would go through, you know, tumultuous things as a child, not having a father present in her life. And I would always, you know, be guided no matter what situation that I found myself in, was always to just continue persevering. And I always had this burning feeling and this burning desire that I was going to impact humanity one day. And I didn't understand what that was. I didn't understand what that fire was. I thought maybe it was, you know, a vocation, a career aspect of my life. And I would ask people, you know, like around me, family and friends, like, do you have this burning desire, like feel like you're being called to do something to help serve humanity? And they're like, well, you know, I know I want to be a doctor or a lawyer or a nurse. And I was like, well, that's amazing. But that's not what I was feeling. I was feeling like whatever it was bigger than me and bigger than a vocation that we, you know, were being taught in school. And I remember going through life and, you know, my mom would always point out, and my aunts and a lot of my family members would always say to me, you know, people around me at the grocery store, people in our life, family, friends would come to me as a young girl, maybe 5 years old, coming for guidance, coming to just, you know, ask my opinion or to ask where I think that they should go in the next part of their journey. And I remember them just being awestricken and being like, you know, wow, like you should really be, you know, a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a therapist. And just something that never really spoke in resonance with me. But I tried to pursue, you know, that kind of vocation because I didn't understand what I was being called for, you know, imminently and just having, you know, the full vision. And I remember going to school and at first I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to fight for justice. I wanted to fight for the underserved. And once I got into law school, I was like, oh, wait, no, this is not what we want to do. this is not it. Even though I loved, you know, aspects of it, it just wasn't for me. And, you know, I just ended up going down the health career path and I ended up, you know, serving in a cancer center for over 13 years and thinking that this was part of my vocation, you know, and being in the palliative end stages and having those deep, profound conversations with, you know, pediatric populations and, you know, people my age that were going through end of life stages. And as they were digressing, obviously, you know, those conversations that you have are such deep conversations. They're not about superficialness. They're not about the weather. They're not about, you know, what you ate last night for dinner. It's like, what would I have changed in the trajectory of my life? What would I have invested more time and energy toward? What would I have allowed this to be my focus? And, or what were my biggest regrets? What were things that I wish that I would have known better? What would I have told myself at a younger age? Like those were the riveting questions and, you know, discussions that were being held in that, you know, in that space and that container. And that really allowed me to just witness, to allow to be in the process of death as well, and to understand the transition is actually a very beautiful process for those that surrender to it. And it also allowed me to see young children, you know, pediatric populations, age 2 to whatever age it might be, and actually being so stoic and so comfortable and so resilient and also surrendering to their mortality and through their transitional period, which was humbling. You know, it was a very humbling experience having young children at home. It was something that obviously you carry with you. And I remember at some point I was just like, you know, I was working at an executive, you know, position in there. And I realized that for me, just the soul aspect of it, it was just It wasn't something that you can just not take home. You can't not take your work home knowing that somebody, maybe someone in the community that you know, or a pediatric, you know, patient is about to lose their life or is fighting for their life. It was something that I realized that I needed to pivot for myself. It was just something that I wasn't able to just surrender and let go when I would come home. And I didn't realize that the alchemy of them sharing their stories and sharing, you know, their deepest fears and sharing all that with me, I didn't realize that was part of what was, you know, to be in the future and what I would, you know, hold in sacred container. It was just something that I naturally thought everybody did in terms of, you know, holding that space for others to be able to be vulnerable and for those to be able to share their life experiences so that they had somebody that they can transfer that knowledge to. And I ended up working in the educational sector as an executive there, and I really loved it. I really loved what I did. I loved the people that surrounded me, but there was a piece that was missing. It didn't feel like I was serving the community like I was intended to. I wasn't fulfilling what I thought I was meant to be fulfilling. Something felt like it was lacking. It was missing. And then I had my first near-death experience, and I went over a cliff. And it was really icy roads, and we had a 90-foot drop, and we should have been dead on impact. And I survived that. And, you know, I had some injuries and things of that nature. But like the police officers, everybody that came, like said, we should have been dead on impact. We landed on a frozen lake, and we were going through the lake. And we had literally missed a rock boulder by 2 millimeters. And if we would have hit it, we would have been crushed on impact, and our vehicle should have rolled and should have killed us on impact as well. So that was a real, you know, deep pivotal moment of awakening, of realizing, you know, in that moment, having that whole life review happen as we're going over the cliff, it really allowed me to realize, like, what are you doing with your life? It was those deep riveting questions, that self, you know, reflection, that deep introspection of, is this the path that you chose? Is this the path that you said that you were going to walk? Are you honoring yourself? Are you honoring the relationships around you? Are you happy? Are you fulfilled? And I was always very optimistic and very positive. But there was an aspect when I asked myself, are you really happy? And the answer was actually no. It was no, I wasn't, right? There was a piece that wasn't in congruency with me. There was a piece that was missing. There was a piece that I wasn't fulfilling within myself, not for a vocation to fulfill, not for a relationship to fulfill, but there was an aspect within myself that was not being fulfilled. And that's what allowed me to start pivoting down that journey. And after that first near-death experience, about a year later, I had 3 simultaneous near-death experiences where I almost bled out to death on 3 different occasions where they had to, you know, use life-saving measures to keep me alive. And every single one of those near-death experiences brought me to another emergence of myself, another emergence of my conscious leadership. Am I on the right path? Am I doing what I said I was going to do in terms of my sacred purpose, of the soul contracts that I came here to learn, my karmic debts, my karmic lessons? All of these things started to initiate. And as I was sitting with that, I mean, this is years of sitting with all of these deep questions and really coming down to the core fundamentals of what they were. And for here, just so people understand, so I'm Native American and I'm French. So it's a culture here. It's a tribal community here called the Métis people. So we have 3, you know, recognized Native Americans in here in Canada, and Métis is one of them. And my tribal community, my ancestors, you know, my lineage, my traditions have always really spoken high resonance with me. And after my last near-death experiences, I started having a dream for almost 4 months straight, the exact same dream, coming every single night. And there was this beautiful Native American woman, and my connection to her felt like she was of my great-grandmother descendant, like my great-great-grandmother. She just emanated so much love. And she was standing in front of this ravina, and she had 2 teepees beside her, and she kept chanting me this melancholy, beautiful, powerful song. I felt at such peace with her and so much love resonating between the both of us. And every time I'd wake up, I'm like, what is she trying to show me? What is she telling me? What is she trying to express to me? And I was telling my partner at the time, like, I had the same dream last night. And then I would hymn the song that she was singing, like that she was singing to me. And he was like, wow, that's a really beautiful song. And I said, I don't know what she's trying to convey to me. I don't understand the full message. I know that she's showing me the land, but I've never seen this land ever in my life. And I ended up bringing it to one of the elders in our tribal community. And our elders are the ones that carry, you know, the wisdom of our traditions, of our songs, of our medicines, of the history of our ancestry. And he was a shaman. And I came to him and I was telling him of my dream because I was perplexed. I'd never had a dream that was happening every single night for 4 months straight. And I was just like, what does this signify? What am I doing? What am I being told? What am I being shown? And I told him my dream and he said, oh my goodness. He said, she's calling you to the land. And I said, I know. I said, I see the land. But he said, she's calling you to the land to come and heal. And I said, come and heal. What am I healing? And he's like, she's calling you to the land to come and heal. And he's like, you're meant to be a healer. You're meant to be a shaman. I'm like, a shaman? Like, where am I starting with that? What is that? He's like, you know, that's something that's going to come to you and I'll help you kind of steward you through that. And he said, it's going to come to you. She'll reveal even more. You just have to have patience. And I was like, you know, going home, trying to Google-ish everything, you know, trying to expedite what this could signify or where do I start? Where do I begin? And sure enough, you know, I had, and as I was chanting him the song in that circle, when I was speaking to him, the song that she had chanted to me, he took a step back and he said, oh my goodness. He said, that song has been sang to me by my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and that song has not been heard in healing circle for over 100 years. He said, it's almost the exact same sound, but just maybe a different of a reverberation of the song. And then I had goosebumps all over my body. I was like, oh my goodness, like, what am I doing with this information? Like, what does this mean? And I had a final night that I had that dream and I woke up and it was pouring rain outside. And I said, to myself, I said, I know where I need to go. I know where I need to go. And my partner at the time, my fiance at the time, I just told him, I said, listen, I'm being called to the land. I know exactly where I need to go. And he was like, okay. Like he knew like I was very like highly intuitive and very instinctive. And he was just like, yeah, like fully supportive. But you realize like it's, you know, it's pouring rain. I said, I understand that. And I was being called to the land that really carried generational healing before us, where there was, it was healing grounds. It was sacred healing grounds. And it was about a 2.5 hour drive from my home. And I ended up going into the forest. And I had a huge ceremony into the forest. I had a huge smudging ceremony. For those that don't know that, a lot of us in our tribal community, we burn like sage, cedar, pine, you know, sema, some, you know, some cultures burn Palo Santo. It's just a way that we cleanse energy and that we come back into the regeneration of peace and coming back into the instilled point of point zero of our epicenter. And I was doing this smudging ceremony into the forest and I just kept crying and crying and crying and crying. And I didn't understand why I was crying this entire time. I was crying on the drive. I was crying while I was there. And I was sitting on this beautiful rock and there was this beautiful forest that was all around me. And as I was sitting there, I was just like, I felt that reconnection happening to spirit and to the ancestors. And the ancestors were starting to come very forthtelling on what they were trying to convey to me. And it was very powerful. And as I was sitting there, I was there for hours. And all of a sudden, you know, a deer, there was a bunny, there was a chipmunk, there was birds flying everywhere. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, what is going on right now? But it was like this reconnection happening to Mother Earth. I was sitting in the earth. I was by the trees. I had a body of water by me. I had fire burning from the Palo Santo. I had all of the elements that were happening around me. And I remember as I looked up, because it was pouring rain, I thought it was so odd that there was this little hummingbird that was flying from tree to tree above me. And I was just witnessing the hummingbird. I was like, that's so bizarre because hummingbirds here, I've never seen them come out in the pouring rain. Like usually they hide until, you know, the rain stops just because it's so heavy on their wings. And as I was looking up, I realized that I'm sitting on this rock and there's no enclosure over me. There's trees around me, but no enclosure over me. And everything around me is drenched and I am bone dry, bone dry. Like not one single drop of rain hit me the entire time that I was in this forest. But this reconnection to self was like coming back to like my purpose, coming back to what life was, coming back to what love was, coming back to, you know, the superficiality of life. What is life? What is the construct of life? It was all of these deep, riveting answers that were just coming through on like how I could imagine. It's just like, you know, when you had like those, you know, old time school, like when we were young, probably dating myself here, but you would like cha-ching and then it would be a different picture and then cha-ching, it would be a different picture. I don't know what that thing was called, but it just felt like it was like image after image after image after image. That was just very, you know, a lot of answers. And when I left that forest, the way that I had left, it was just, I had never been the same since I went there. And there was something that healed inside of me that I couldn't describe, but I knew that I felt that inner peace and that inner stillness and that inner fulfillment. I knew exactly what I needed to do. And I needed to continue following the whispers of where I was being guided and to not create resistance throughout my path. And after I came out of there, I was like, okay, if I can do that for somebody else, like if I can help somebody come to that own place of self-recognition and self-remembrance, then I know that I've mastered something, that I know that I've locked in something, I've unlocked something that I can help others facilitate, you know, that deep knowingness within themselves, that deep peace within themselves. And then that's where that kind of journey started. And then it just, you know, spiraled from there.
All right, Roxanne, there's a lot to uncover here.
Yeah.
So the classic toy photo viewer was called ViewMaster.
You got it. The ViewMaster.
The ViewMaster, yes. So I remember that well. All right, let's go back for a second. You said your mom had two children, so you're one of them.
Yeah.
And brother, okay. And same father?
Same father, yeah. And then my dad had two other children, but my mother raised us independently as a single mother, yes.
Did you have contact with your dad once the divorce happened or not really?
It was maybe, like we would see him maybe once a year. We would visit, he was still living in Colorado. We would go and spend our summers there, but we wouldn't really hear from him. And then that just kind of started diminishing and diminishing and diminishing over time.
Mm-hmm. So obviously there was not that much interaction. What did your mom push for? What did she want to see you do?
My mom really just wanted always for me to be happy and to fulfill my heart and to follow my heart. I think the vocation of being an executive, you know, I've been an executive for multiple organizations. I'm still an executive to this day. It was more of the apprehension, you know, the more old school mentality of security, stability, benefits, pension. Like there was more of that, you know, that unsurety of never having somebody actually go into their own business venture, especially in a world that they weren't really privy to, you know, in their era. But she fully had, like I fully had her confidence and the confidence of my family that they knew exactly what I was being called for. There was never a question of that in any way. So I want to say that they were supportive of both, but I think the old school mentality of them at the beginning stages of where I made that pivotal change into, you know, into corporate, into my own leadership ability of the spiritual organization, that the apprehension was their natural fears of living through the Great Depression and being a baby boomer and understanding what it is to be in a state of sufferance, you know, financially.
Very interesting. So let's dive a little deeper into, because thank you for sharing your upbringing. I think that's very important.
Yeah.
When you were working with the dying, have you ever heard of Bronnie Ware?
No.
So Bronnie Ware, she wrote a memoir called Regrets of the Dying.
Yeah.
And she listed the top five regrets in her work. And I'm gonna let you know what they are. And I'm curious to see if you resonate with them based on your conversation. So the number one regret was, I wish I'd had the courage to live a true life to myself, not the life that others expected of me. That was number one.
The should have. Yeah.
The should have, exactly. The second is, you probably guessed it, I wish I hadn't worked so hard.
Yeah.
Okay. The third was, I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings more. The fourth was, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends and loved ones. And then five, I wish I had let myself be happier. So does that resonate with the conversations that you had with those that you spoke with?
There's a piece that absolutely does resonate. I think there's definitely some familiarities. I think, you know, for each person, it's going to be very independent to them as well. You know, where somebody might have lacked in one part of their life may not be where somebody else lacked another part of their life. When we think about, you know, the wheel of creating harmonic you know, the harmonics of our life. You know, if we're more focused on career, more focused on family, what I've really realized too in those pivotal moments, and I've supported a lot of people on their deathbed through family and friends, and people have called on me to help their loved ones transition, is that what ends up happening? Yeah, there's a bit of that regret of not speaking into the emotionality of the body, but it's the forgiveness piece. It's not forgiving themselves, not forgiving others, being able to hold on to something that really had no accountability or ownership for them to be able to hold on to, which also perpetuated a little bit of their illness a lot of the times that is codependent of what they were actually dying from, right? So I think when we look at a person is that we want to have all these generic similarities, but in reality, we're such individuals and we have such a different imprint that what speaks true to one person might not be in the exact resonance of another. So when somebody is going through transition, some people think that they've lived a really full life and lived a very well life. And there's always going to be ways of improvement, you know, where they feel that they lacked. But what I've heard most is that, you know, we work so hard to reach a milestone that a lot of the times the barometer of our happiness is dependent on reaching a milestone instead of being in the now moment and being in the moment of being present and being with our family and having intentionality of actually being able to have that curiosity, to have that joy, to have that happiness of that now moment, because it's always about the next expectation of the next milestone. So I've heard a lot of that too, about being present in the moment with those that they loved and not wishing they were doing the to-do list that has 100 things to do, or wishing that they were somewhere else or doing something else. And how is this going to get them to their goal? It's about being in that moment and being able to enjoy that moment, the fluidity. A lot of what I've heard throughout my tenure is a lot of people regret just being, not being. Right? They haven't been, they've been doing their whole life, push mentality, and never being able to be in a state of flow, of surrender, of being, right? That presence, being back to that moment of knowing that if you're with your family, that you're actually able to enjoy the moment and you're not cultivating something for the next moment or for 10 minutes or an hour down the path. You're actually being able to be present in that moment. And then the forgiveness piece, the forgiving themselves for maybe things that they've chosen or the way that they've parented or the way that they've showed up for their life. There's a lot that happens around forgiveness and forgiving others that maybe, you know, haven't been able to show up in the best way for them, and being able to release that so that they can release the contract, right? So I see a lot of that happens, is that as I'm dealing with somebody in my family right now, in my home right now, I'm helping support my best friend who is passing. She's palliative. And it's about that dismantling, right? Where do I need to forgive? Where do I need to release? Where do I need to surrender so I don't feel like I have unfinished business? It's about that realism, right? The realism of accountability and the awareness.
Yeah. Eckhart Tolle, I'm sure you've heard of him, speaks to the present moment, to the now. One of his quotes was something to the fact of, whatever the present moment contains, which is all there is, accept it as if you had chosen it. So it's an interesting concept. We're speaking a lot of on hat number 7, which is the seeker. It's really the self-actualization hat. It's just like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You start off with, you know, the different hats that contribute and build a foundation to fulfillment. But hat number 7 closes that loop, because it is the undertaking of understanding who you are in relations to the cosmos, in relations to God or your higher power, and then realizing it's all one of the same.
All one.
So the question is, when you had your near-death experiences, and you had probably 3 or 4 more than most do.
Yeah.
So you only had 4.
It's okay. It's not a competition, but I think I win.
You win for sure. I never had one, and
let's hope.
Who knows? So let's hope not, but you never know, because that good things could come out of it, which is exactly what the present moment is. You've chosen it. You need to live it. You need to help others with those lessons. And I think you're doing that. When you started questioning your life after these near-death experiences, how much of what you went through with the dying contributed to that self-reflection?
Oh, 99% of it. 99% of it, which is why I contracted it to happen in this lifetime, right? For me to come to that place of reckoning within myself and to come to that place of self-awareness and conscious leadership within myself, it needed to be ignited, right? If I wasn't choosing the path intentionally, it needed to be ignited in another way that I have chosen to step into this embodiment. Uh-huh. That was really important. If 99%, I would have awakened, I'm sure, and I was already coming to a place of conscious leadership within myself, but to the caliber that I was coming to, I mean, it probably would have taken me another decade or two, right? This all happened when I was in my 20s. I'm in my 40s now, so that's 20 years ago, right? So when we think about that, where I would have been now without those pivotal moments or those catalyst moments, and it's not that we go and forcefully create them. If they're meant to be, and that's what we've contracted to do, then it's intentional, right? It's about the intentionality of it. And that's why when most people have a near-death experience, why it's so pivotal and so life-changing, because a lot of times we're living in a fog. We're living in a place of automation. We're living in a place of autopilot, and we're not in the actual congruency of our truth. We're not in the congruency of following our soul's path. We're not in the congruency of following the whispers of our soul that we are being guided to go on every single moment of the day. Everything is a choice, right? We do have free will. So that aspect of choice and how we decide to choose up into our space is also very intentional, right? So when we're directed on a path, and, you know, we're inundated by a path of, you know, quick responses and easy decisions, and I should do this, and I should do this, and I should have that, and I should want this, and I should want that, that also perpetuates a life on should and not actually what I want and what I desire for my life and what I'm being called to actually elevate into. It doesn't mean that you can't be in leadership and still, you know, be into your consciousness and to your spirituality. That's not what it is. It's not about negating one aspect of ourselves to, you know, endorse another, to, you know, increase another. It's about how do we embrace all of our multidimensional self, all of our leadership aspects to make us a more powerful leader and to make us a more empowered leader. When we build human connection, we have to speak from a place that we've experienced. We have to speak to a place that we have walked and we have led within ourselves, right? So how do we go about doing that if we don't choose ourselves and we don't choose our path?
Yeah, it's interesting. Tony Robbins say, don't shoot all over yourself. So that's one thing that we need to really take to mind. But you're talking about the path, right? So all those experiences that you had obviously gave you a deep clarity about your path. But a lot of entrepreneurs, because this is an entrepreneur-led community, they feel a sense of purpose for whatever it is, whether it's with their product, service, or just their life's journey. But they struggle to activate that sense of purpose, right? How do you help people break through and take action so they can achieve what you've achieved? And that is understanding, one, what the path is, activating it, and then following that path.
Yeah, it's bringing us back to, again, that zero point field of our multidimensional self. We're embracing all of ourself, and we're not just listening to the mind and to the ego and the perceptions of what we think that we want for our life, right? So when we are going into business, and I mean, there's a lot of successful businesses that are product-based or that are service-based that maybe aren't in the congruency of their highest self, and that's okay too. That's what they're choosing, right? That's a choice. But when we're talking about conscious leadership and we're talking about the seven hats of leadership, it's important that we're also embracing all of ourselves. So when we have a leader that has desires or that has purpose and isn't able to activate that purpose or to be able to activate the action that comes along with that purpose, it all comes back to the law of the universe, right? The guiding principles of the universe. Without action, without soft action, we have no reciprocation, right? We have no reciprocation in that soft action. So if we have purpose, but we don't have enough fundamental things in our core to actually affirm that purpose or to believe in that purpose, then we have a purpose without action. And a purpose without action is a dream, right? It's not a dream that we can actualize. It's not a dream that we can create into reality. So when we're working with those that, you know, maybe be lacking purpose, it's about bringing back the journey to self, right? The journey of why you came here. What did you come here to explore? What did you come here to create? And what are the steps to allow you to get to that place of creation? if I'm telling myself that I want to be a successful entrepreneur and I want to be a seven-figure, eight-figure entrepreneur, and yet every part of my energy center and every part of my centers of intelligence is emitting something different of a fear or a fear-based belief system or a core value or an experience that says that you're not good enough. You are not going to be able to achieve that. You can't have happiness in every area of your life. That is not acceptable. That is not doable. Then that is a story that we continuously tell ourselves. And we also admit that into the solar universe, right? That is.
And that's really important. I think it's worth repeating. Repeat that with another angle and explain why, even though your mind says, I'm going north, but your emotional state and your spiritual state says, I'm going south, that north will never happen. Explain that, because I think that's one. There was The Secret, and the whole thing about The Secret was, this was a movie back a couple of decades ago, or a documentary, and it was, and a lot of folks just thought, hey, I'm going to just think it, and it's going to happen and manifest, and that's really not the case. It really is embodying and connecting where your mind wants to go and where your soul purpose needs to take that, right? So help bridge that gap and help explain it a little further.
Absolutely. So as we all know, you know, even through science and through religious structure, we are multidimensional beings. I mean, it's not deniable, right? So we have our soul energetic body, we have our intellectual body, the mind, right? The mind, we also have a brain within our heart system. We have a brain within our gut system. We have all of these centers of intelligence, which is called our chakra system. And each part of that center of intelligence, what I believe, you know, just my own, you know, theory is that each part of these centers of intelligence will also be considered a brain at some aspect because of the neural pathways of how they communicate to one another. So we have all of these main chakra systems that happen within our body, you know, more than we can even count. We have an astral body, we have a sensory body, we have an emotional body, we have the physical body. We have all of these bodies that come into align, which is the consistent of our multidimensional self. So let's just speak of the energy centers to kind of, you know, simplify this a little bit better. So if my rootedness, right, the root of my energy center that is at the base of, you know, the genitals and things of that nature that carry the ancestral lineages and carry epigenetic pathways that say that I can't have financial success because I've never seen the result of financial success throughout the duration of my life. It's always happened to others and never to our family or to me. Or I've never seen a healthy relationship. I don't know what a healthy relationship is. All I have seen is abusive cycles, that generational, you know, pattern in that lineage that has transpired. When we look at those epigenetic pathways, and then we have experience that happen that gets carried into the womb, and we have things that are, you know, blocking our solar plexus that allows us to channel information from the solar universe. And then we have our heart, you know, our heart system, our heart center of intelligence, another place of a neural pathway in our gut that also helps make decisions, right? We can make a heart-based decision. We can make a gut-based decision. We can make a cognitive-based decision. When we have these things that are sitting, let's say in our heart, right? We went through wounding as a child. We were neglected. We had abuse happen in our family. These experiences get held into our body because they're energy, right? Energetic motions is part of the emotional centers of intelligence. So our energetic motions is energy that gets imprinted into our physicality, into our physical body. So if I have all of these fears and I have all of these beliefs and I have all of these core values that are instilled within me, within these energy centers, and my mind is saying, I want this and I'm going to get this, and it's all about the mindset, then we're denying every part of our multidimensional self that is saying everything different, where the emanation of the frequency is outputting a different source of what we're saying we're emitting than what our actual thought process is. So it's about the intentionality of the emotionality. It's the intentionality about the sensory body. It's the intentionality of each energy center and why it's so important to be able to clear that, come back to a place of inner peace so that you're creating your own belief system. You're creating your own value system. All of these things are integral as we're trying to attract anything or manifest anything into our life. It's not the law of attraction. It's the law of vibration. Everything is vibration. Our thoughts, our fears, our beliefs, everything is an emission of vibration. So if I'm saying that I want this and I'm on the FM radio station, but what I want is on the AM radio station, the two alignments can never come into synergetic sequencing, right? So when we understand that, that everything that we think that we want and we say that we want with the mind doesn't mean that it's in the congruency of everything that their energy centers are actually emitting out in terms of the energy source. It's creating resistance.
So I'm going to ask you a follow-up to that. The centers of intelligence, all the way down to the cells, okay?
Cellular.
Are speaking one language.
Yep.
Your brain is speaking a completely different language. Yep. And like you mentioned, I love the word Googleicious. You can't have Googleicious translate to translate what your cell consciousness is speaking to your mind consciousness. We haven't figured that out, although somebody who does, that's a big moneymaker right there. Yeah. And I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the way that they communicate, or at least try to communicate, is through whispers, through intuitive nudges. And a lot of times, it's like the universe speaking to you, right, through your cells. And so what Oprah said, sometimes you'll get a little pebble knocking down, hitting your head. And if you don't listen, and then it becomes a little larger, and then there's a big damn boulder. And that's when you have a near-life experience if you don't listen. But how do we, especially A-type, mind-forward entrepreneurs, how do we take those intuitive nudges, the whispers that you're so familiar with, and recognize and trust it, and then, even more importantly, translate it so we can take action on it?
And that's the thing, is that most entrepreneurs are a little bit more in the mind body, right? The logical sense, the analytics, the database, the data points of what we're looking for success, but not all success is through the mind, right? So when we think about the mind, it's not about negating the mind. It's not about, you know, saying that the mind isn't, you know, making the right decisions or anything like that. But it has been proven that our cognitive way of thinking isn't as accurate as our instinctive way of thinking. And that's naturally so that we could defend ourselves and keep ourselves safe and put us in a beautiful place. But what happens is that when we're too much in the mind, that means that everything is being calibrated through the mind. Everything is processing through the mind. And we're not actually listening to where we're being guided. We're listening to where we think that we need to go, and we're not actually feeling into it. We're not being in the congruency of it. We're not allowing the intuitiveness and the instinctiveness to actually direct us onto the path. Yeah, we might have boo-boos along that path, and it's important to have those boo-boos so that we learn through the experiences. That's the emergence of leadership. We can't be a leader with not having any failures, or to not, you know, have any challenges, or to have any understandings of how business is conducted. That's the importance of leadership. What it comes down to is that if we are not in the congruency of ourselves, this is only sustainable for so long. It's not about silencing the mind to listen to everything else. It's about how do we work with the alchemy of each part of our body so that when we make a decision, we're not just making a decision of the mind. We're making a decision of the mind, heart, and instinct and intuitiveness. And everything is coming into that synergetic alignment. Everything is coming into that congruency where the mind isn't in conflict with the emotion. The emotion is in conflict with the instinct. The instinct is in conflict with the mind. It's how do we come to a place of solace when we're making decisions? It's not about being less intelligent. It's about using a higher sense of intelligence, because now you're using every center of intelligence instead of one computing intelligence that makes decisions on a day-to-day basis.
I can tell you that my first company, I was very much mind-centric, and I was not following my intuition, which, by the way, is all based on fear. And that also leads to many entrepreneurs, because of the fear-based mind, giving away their power to others that might or might not be thinking in their best interest. My second business, after I've hit rock bottom, after I've came up with the seven hats concept and framework, and after I started really focusing on hat number seven, the seeker, as well as the soul, hat number one, those are the bookends. So the soul is mindset, self-love, inner being, and then the seeker is outer. So it really is that connection, and all the other hats are in between. And when I started with my second company, Promomesh, acting more on intuition, that made the difference, I believe, between failure with the first company and success with the second, because ultimately the opposite of fear is love, and love is the same as trust and faith, right?
Yeah. And see, for me, fear is an existing emotion, but it's also a secondary emotion. So the actual primary feeling that we feel is sadness, right? If I fail, what does this mean for my family? What does this mean for me as a person who actually put all to my, you know, all my investment of energy, my time, everything that I put into the business, what does that actually mean? It's that deep sadness, right? When we make decisions or we're out in the wild or we're with our family, it's never actually about the secondary feeling. It's about the primary feeling that actually transmutes very quickly into fear, right? Because fear is a natural reaction that we put instead of place of the actual deep sadness that we feel. If something happens to my family member, that's the devastation of the sadness. It's not actually around the fear. The fear is a secondary emotion. So when we think as a leader on how we make decisions, we don't want to make fear-based decisions. We don't want to make highly emotional decisions as well. It's very important. Again, coming back to the consistency of the mind, the heart, the gut, everything being in alignment as we make those decisions. Am I integrity? Am I going to do business in integrity? Am I going to lead my family with integrity? It's about showing up in that integrous behavior of the conscious leadership of the truth of yourself. If I run a business and I'm not in the integrity of me and I'm more in the mind of me of wanting success, at the end of the day, when I lose that business, yes, it's going to be devastating, but it's going to be even more devastating that I didn't allow all of the aspects of me to be in the congruency of the business, to be supported by the business, right? There's a lack, there's a piece that is missing. And that's what we're seeing in leaders today. That's why they come for conscious leadership. That's why we're looking at human connection. That's why we're looking at the heart, mind, and the body and the multidimensional self as we make decisions, just as we're learning that on the healing spectrum. And that's why science is now catching up to spirituality in that way, right? Because something, there's an ingredient missing. So how do we bring those ingredients? And it doesn't mean we're never not going to have a failure in our life, but it means living with that, the peace of that, that you're already in inner peace when you're making these decisions, is knowing that you did everything within the integrity of you before you stepped into that decision-making process.
For sure. But fear is such an integral role in entrepreneurship. I mean, in life in general, but entrepreneurship, because you're always so vulnerable to death at every moment, especially with a startup. And even before, I had it when I was leaving a job, a secure job, or starting something new, or just even stepping into our power.
Yeah.
That fear holds so many people back. And I get what you're saying, but do you have any actionable steps? Is there like a framework that you've developed when you become a fear-based being?
Yeah.
Where's that silence between the notes? Because in music, if there's no silence between the notes, it's chaos, right?
Yeah.
And just noise. So how do we find that silence between the notes in order for us to move past it and then move from fear to love-based thinking?
Absolutely. And that framework is different for every single person. And that's why it's so important in my conscious leadership and the integrity of me, that it's also always customizable to the person, because where somebody holds beliefs, maybe somebody where somebody else holds emotions, right? So it's being able to break down those barriers. But in principle, what we're looking for is, do the beliefs align with the boundaries? Do the boundaries align with the embodiment of who they are, right? And that is the actuality. So when you say that you have a boundary or that you have a belief system, what are those belief systems and what are the boundaries that support that belief system? What is the congruency of that belief system in the boundaries and in the actions that you live on a day-to-day basis? When we're looking for silence, that means that we actually have to allow ourselves to be in a place of solitude and allow ourselves to be in a place of quiet to actually hear ourselves. Right? It's not about going into deep meditation and trying to silence the mind. It's about acknowledging the mind and accepting the mind for everything that it's bringing forth and letting it know that, thank you so much for bringing this forward to me. I allow myself to hear what my heart is speaking now, right? It's the acknowledgement piece. It's not about, you know, deterring or deferring or, you know, pushing away something, an aspect of ourselves. It's about the acceptance of it all. So if we're not able to be in a moment of solitude, why are we not able to be in the solitude? What is the belief system beyond it? No matter what our neurological pathways are, if we're neurodivergent, we should be able to come to a place of quietness and instillment. It just has never been taught or practiced. It's like a muscle, right? When we come back to that instillment of self, again, it's not about quieting the mind and silencing the mind. It's about listening to what the soul is saying. It's listening to what our intuitiveness is saying, listening to the instinct, listening to where we're holding beliefs, listening to where we're holding experiences, looking where we are holding non-forgiveness towards ourselves, towards past, you know, previous failed partnerships or successes or anything that has come to that fruition. It's about being able to be in that grittiness within that shadow self to be able to realize the alchemy of that. What did I learn from that? What is the experience from that? What can I gift to that, right? It's about that acknowledgement piece. It's the acknowledgement. We have acceptance. We have awareness, acceptance, acknowledgement, and action. Right? That is the framework. But in order to get there, we have to be able to come to a place of inner peace. We have to come to a place of inner fulfillment and introspection and in self-reflection to be able to hear what our bodies are telling us, right? Not just the physical body, but the physical body is holding the score, right? When you think about the tension of when you're about to lose a business or something isn't going right, what happens? Your body naturally tenses up because the energy that is permeating through the body. Right. So it's coming back to this place to be able to hear, to be able to listen. And a lot of the times we just want the answers right away and we want to press that quick action button, but that's not the reality of life. That is not. That's a falsity, right? That's a falsity. So when we think about the falsification of that, then we are realizing that we're in this hustle mentality and this push mentality where we're never in a state of flow and state of being. And if we're not in a state of flow and state of being, we're not able to accept the reciprocation of the action that we are putting forward. And that state of being, that state of flow is where we listen. We listen to ourselves. When's the last time you cried? When's the last time you listened to yourself? When's the last time you forgave yourself for any past life, you know, discretions in business or anything of that nature? Where have you held on to non-forgiveness?
Yeah, it's all about flow versus force, as you say. And there's so much there, even in terms of our emotions, right? Because what struck me from researching you is how you describe emotions. You talk about, and I'm paraphrasing, but something to the point of that we don't suppress our emotions, we pressurize them. And I thought that was a pretty powerful way of looking at it. How does that affect leadership and decision-making when we pressurize them?
It greatly affects leadership because if I'm not in the integrity of fully of my embodiment of my full self, right? Let's just think about it this way. This is not about shitting on ourselves. This is not about, you know, bad or shame. This is not about that. This is just the realism of what it is. If I'm coming to an organization as an unhealed leader, I'm only able to meet myself in where I'm able to meet myself and to meet others, right? I can only meet others in where I'm able to meet myself in that aspect. So the way that I make decisions, even though they might not be emotionally based, that means also that they can be very desensitized and very emotionally removed, where there's no empathy and no compassion and no human connection or no, you know, human appreciation of those that are actually making my business successful. How I show up in leadership, when we talk about a pressurization of emotions, there's no such thing as a suppression of emotion. We can't push something down and assume that it'll just continue to be suppressed and that there won't be some type of pressurization that will happen. It's like a pressure cooker. Something happens in your childhood and something that you haven't processed, or something has happened in your adulthood that you've not allowed yourself to process, to grieve through, right? When we talk about grief, it doesn't just mean that grief when we lose a loved one. It means grief of an experience that has happened that we have to allow ourselves to feel the emotionality of it so that we can release it. It's the energetic motion that isn't entrapped and imprinted. So when we think about the pressurization of emotion, you know, if I want to give some tangibility here and give an example, you know, as a child, if I was abused as a child and I never allow that to be a place of talk therapy, I never allow that to be a place of allowing myself to grieve and forgiving, you know, what has happened, not about forgiving the perpetrator and, you know, saying that it was okay for you to, you know, against my sovereignty, but it's about that forgiveness so that we're not holding on and seeping onto that poison that they've instilled within us. And that then we're now being empoisoned by that on a daily basis, which also makes us incredibly sick, right? So when we think about that pressurization, let's say I had really deep sadness or I felt like, you know, just my autonomy wasn't respected. There's a pressurization. Now, anything that happens to activate any of that will be a natural activation. And that's how I'll make decisions based on that activation, because now I'm coming from an unhealed place. right? So when we talk about that pressurization is, yes, at that moment, the initial reaction, because the initial response is not fear, is actually deep sadness of something might happen to me that will cause me maybe not to be here, or to be harmed, or to be this, or something happened to my family member. It's coming back to that deep-rooted sadness, right? The deep-rooted sadness is the primary emotion. When we have deep-rooted sadness and we don't deal with it and we compact it, and we don't allow ourselves to have emotional releases. We don't allow ourselves to grieve through the process and acknowledge awareness, acknowledge, accept, action, right? It's about that whole process over and over and over again. When we're not allowing ourselves to release that emotion, what does it turn into? It transmutes itself naturally, right? So either it becomes irritation, then it becomes resentment, then it becomes anger, then it becomes outbursts. A lot of things happen, or we go inward and we become numb and we become desensitized and we become emotionally disconnected because we lost a bit of our soul essence. We lost a bit of that emotional connectivity. So when we're leading from a place that we have all of these heightened emotions that we are not dealing with, we also make decisions based on those emotions in our humanness, right? That's just the natural ability of making decisions. So anything that comes into our peripheral, anything that comes into our vicinity, we're making decisions from a place of experience that we've went through so that we can actually eventually release that, because nobody wants to hold on to it.
Yep. We spoke a lot about current life trauma and how to overcome that and how to heal, but there's obviously something called generational trauma. And I think your work with ancestral healing and karmic lessons is fascinating. And I don't think most people even realize how past generational cycles affect their life and success today. How do we understand those traumas, number one? Because that's a whole other language. And how do we clear those cycles to move forward? Because it's easy to look at, I was abused as a child, and let's work through that. It's way different. 15 lifetimes ago, I was abused as a child. That's a whole other story. So tell me about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we do, generational regression or anything intergenerational or generational patterns and healings and cycles, is when we get to a place of when we understand what our beliefs are naturally, what our own truth is, when we go into that place of discernment and differentiation of what is mine, what isn't mine, what actually happened to me, what hasn't happened to me, then we start to actually see the patterns. And when we look at the life cycle of patterns, let's say, we bring this back down into a context because we, spoke about abuse, but let's say, your father was abusive to you, and then his father was abusive to him, and then his father was abusive to, that great-grandfather. When we think about that chain of command, and when we talk about generational healing, is about how do we break a cycle? How do we break a generational pattern? But how do we actually become aware that it is an actual generational pattern, or that we're slipping into a generational pattern? A lot of the times you'll hear people say like, oh, my mom did this and my grandmother did this to her. And, my grandfather did this and grandfather did that. And I'm never going to be like them. I'm never going to do that. And all of a sudden, 20 years down the road, they have their own family. And all of a sudden, these activations and triggers and pathways start to come to the forefront because of the epigenetic pathways that have been created. When we think about our epigenetics, this is part of our DNA molecule structure. It's not our actual DNA where we are not able to, shift it or change it. These are the malleable parts of our DNA structure that we're actually able to shift. It's part of our genetic system that we're able to shift. So when you intentionally choose, right, let's just say there's a lot of breakdown that happens of how we discover that. But when you choose to show up differently for your family, to break that cycle of, generational abuse, that is a deliberate choice to be able to heal the generations, thousands and thousands of generations before you, I'm sure, to all the way to the generations ahead of you, because now your children have no idea of that epigenetic pathway because they haven't been privy to it in terms of that. So when we talk about generational cycles and patterns, again, it comes back to that awareness, the belief system. What is actually my belief system? What are the boundaries that I actually want to put in place? How is this congruent for me, right? Like, did I actually do this? Why do I act this way? Why am I triggered when this happens? Nothing in my life, I've seen this a lot of times when we do, deep, when we go into theta state healing, where the soul comes to the rise and it speaks for itself. A lot of times the humanist doesn't even know that these patterns or these subconscious patterns are happening. And when it's brought to the forefront, they're like, well, I don't know where I would have gotten that. That nothing, you know, nothing's ever happened to me in my childhood or anything like that. And then we start going further back in the lineages, right? We ask, you know, the soul memory to start kind of speaking onto that. And then we start understanding the epigenetic pathways and the soul contract pathways of what they actually chose to carry out and break the cycle of. So when we're seeing something that really doesn't belong to us, it's because we're being asked to actually heal that generational pattern and cycle. And when we think about family constellation, you know, when we do family constellations, it's about that channeling of information being brought through human form.
Hat number 7 is one of my favorite hats, and I can have conversations for days on it. It's fascinating. It's real. And I hopefully will welcome you back to continue this conversation, because I can go so many paths with you. But looky how time flies. I'd like to close out my interviews with the following question. Who did you have to stop being, and who did you need to become to manifest your current success today?
I needed to stop being the nice girl and trying to people please everybody and saying yes to everybody except for myself. And when I chose to step into my voice and to be empowered into my voice, I then became me.
Love that. It's you're embodying hat number 1 and hat number 7 all at once. And that's fantastic, because those are the hats that matter most. Roxanne, what do you want to tell the 7 hatters? How could they connect with you? How could they have these wonderful conversations with you? What can you help them with?
Absolutely. Anybody can connect with me through, you know, theilluminationretreat.com. And what I would say is, you know, everything on the website is very indicative of the work that I do, and the testimonies speak to that. I mean, I do what I do because it's passion-based, but I also realize the need to be able to create better impact at the conscious leadership level. And that's where I definitely feel called to do. And as we build, you know, better conscious leadership communities, and it's not about just being in the spirituality of it, it's about embracing all of who we are, is what makes a more impactful work, and how we conduct business, and how, you know, we strive for our life, and how we show up for our families and our children. That is the impact that we are looking to make.
Tell us about the Illumination Retreat.
The Illumination Retreat is where we come back into reconnection of our entire self. And it's about bringing back that luminescence and that light within ourselves. A lot of us feel like we've lost that light. When I come into retreat space, a lot of them don't even remember what their passions are, don't even remember who they are as a person. They've lost a part of their identity, but it's about bringing back all of their multidimensional self and embracing all of it and healing it forward, so that they can actually step into the full embodiment of who they are. And that is what changes in leadership, and that's what changes in business, and that's what perpetuates growth and expansion and success.
And where do you have these retreats, and what happens in these retreats?
We have them all over the world. I'm always called to the land. So wherever I feel that the sacred land is calling, I believe the land helps transmute a lot of the energy and helps create that space of just humility, and where that vulnerability can be shared. And depending on the sacred rites that were performed, it's usually native to the land of where we're going. It's really important in these retreat spaces that it's all about non-judgment. It's about holding space, and it's about actually exploring the self and realizing who the self is in all ways, and self-identification. It's not about identifying ourselves in one way, having success in one aspect of our life and not having success in every aspect of our life. It's how do we bring the harmonification to have success throughout all of our life, through our family dynamics, through our love dynamics, through our partnerships, through our friendships, through our businesses. It is all possible.
Do you have a retreat coming up?
I do. Yeah. I have a cellular healing retreat. That one is very, you know, soulfully immersive. That one's happening in Peru from June 7th to June 14th this year.
Wow. And do you ever practice any healing like ayahuasca, or is it more just connecting and acting upon the healing?
So I think it's really important to highlight that I do believe in Mother Nature's gifts to everybody, but I don't believe in hallucinogenics. I don't think that we need hallucinogenics to connect with our soul aspect of ourselves. I think there's a lot of incongruencies with that. We are able to connect deeply with ourselves. We just need to be taught, and that is part of the cellular healing retreat, is how to actually deeply connect with ourselves in all ways and allowing the soul body to be present.
Go check out the Illumination Retreat in Peru, Sounds like a marvelous time.
Thank you.
And probably life-changing. Roxanne, thank you so much for gracing us in the Seven Hats. It's been one nugget after another and enlightening conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Yuval. It was such an honor to be here. I appreciate you deeply.
I hope you enjoyed my deeply transformative conversation with Roxanne. Let's end today with the show segment that I refer to as What Can We Hang Our Hat On? And here is my takeaway. We are spiritual beings navigating a human experience. And within this journey, setbacks, traumas, and hardships aren't merely obstacles. They are profound teachers guiding us towards deeper self-awareness and purpose. Roxanne's experience reminds us that it's not life's events that define us, but rather how we respond. How we choose to hear and trust those quiet whispers of intuition that speak from the depth of our soul. Throughout life, we are often disconnected from ourselves, caught in cycles of generational trauma, fear, and societal pressures. Roxanne beautifully demonstrates that by courageously stepping into our truth, confronting our shadows, and embracing vulnerability, we unlock our innate capacity for healing, growth, and profound spiritual enlightenment. This alignment, she teaches, isn't about force. It's about flow. Trusting the sacred process of becoming fully and unapologetically ourselves. As entrepreneurs and seekers, let us carry Roxanne's wisdom forward. Choosing authenticity over conformity, love over fear, and conscious connection over superficial success. Remember, your greatest power emerges when your thoughts, heart, intuition, and soul speak the same language. I want to thank Roxanne once again for joining me so that we can all benefit from her wisdom. And if today's episode resonated with you and your spirit, please subscribe, share this episode, and help us continue to expand this deeply inspired Seven Hats community. So until next time, my name is Yuval Selik, and I tip my hat to you.